This is Brock and Salk.
Brock Huard is my hero.
Jay Buhner just punched me in the kidney.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studio.
On Seattle Sports Station.
Well, we're going to excuse you from the interview.
Doesn't really work that way, Sherm. This is a show that has my name on it.
It kind of does, though.
Brought to you by Carter Volkswagen in Ballard.
Now, here are your hosts, Brock Huard and Mike Salk.
Hello!
Tom Brady, Brock, is looking to retire as often as you and I have broken up. So, big morning.
Yeah. He waited till, you know, the rest of the kids get to sign their letters of intent today. So, fax machines are out all over the country.
Of course.
And he thought, yeah, now's a good time.
Well, it sounds like this is the weekend the 80 for Brady movie comes out, too. So, maybe there's some
synergy.
Yeah, exactly. Trying to make sure that, as Morris said, he's controlling her Twitter timeline. So,
I'm going to try to use a big word or two in every segment.
Really?
Yeah, because I know last night you were well-versed in big words. You and the 70-plus crowd, it was awesome. I'm glad you had a blast.
Yeah.
You and Heather had a date night at a book reading and a conversation with an incredible author.
Yes.
Yeah, who makes Peyton Manning's forehead look small.
He's got a big forehead. Yeah, that's a bit of a five head he's got going on there. Yes, thank you to Immortals, who we saw last night at Town Hall Seattle, and Seattle Arts and Lectures puts that on. He was phenomenal, incredibly interesting. I really liked it. I want to go see more authors talk now.
Really?
The crowd, let's just say, it's a bit of a retirement community crowd.
It's a constant battle. We're going to open a PDF.
All right.
Who's next?
That's about being your parents. This is about being your grandparents, man.
Did it feel like a Progressive commercial?
No, it did not. No.
Like, seriously?
No.
A little bit?
Hi, my name is Dr. Rick. I'm a world-renowned parental life coach.
No, it didn't, because as you said, as I told you yesterday and you asked me about it, it felt more like 10th grade English class than anything else.
Okay.
He's going through his book, but it was instead of, you know, your idiot English teacher, it was the guy who wrote the book who was taking you through, you know, what it all meant and why he wrote it and his process. And you know what? If you had been there, you would have enjoyed it.
I would have. I know.
I think you really would have enjoyed it. If you had been there, I mean, it would have helped to read the book or all three of them. But like, if you had been there, I think you would have really enjoyed hearing this really smart guy talk about his process of writing and some of the metaphors. And it was great. I really enjoyed it.
Oh, you just call your English teacher an idiot?
No, I called your English teacher an idiot. My English teacher was great.
Oh, yeah. Mine was too. I love Mrs. Blasey and I love Miss Snyder.
Wait, so you call our English teachers idiots?
Oh, absolutely.
Are you assessing our language skills?
Yes,
right now?
100%. Yes, that's exactly what's happening. No, I'm
just coming for the guy that gives two spaces after every sentence.
Absolutely. That's a typing thing, though. That's a different issue.
Yep.
No, I'm not worried about your 10th grade English teachers. They seem to be fine. Although, we've referenced a bunch of books that I feel like you guys should have read in high school, or short stories and stuff. Most Dangerous Game came up, a couple of others. But I'm more concerned about your elementary school teachers who never taught you anything about Greek myths. Mm. That's still the thing that's like sticking with me. I don't understand what was going on there and why you don't know anything about
Well, I'm a lot more concerned mythology. With your elementary school teacher that taught you penmanship because can't
disaster.
Write.
Total disaster. Yeah, they failed. Absolutely.
Okay, anywho, I derailed
Mrs. Pontecorvo.
I derailed the segment, sorry. Tom Brady is done. And he should have been done last year. And it's 40 days in the wilderness and everything else. He should have been done.
Really?
I think so.
Why?
I don't think there was anything to come back and play for at this point. I think it was pretty costly in his marriage, and I don't think there was anything to gain.
I don't know, man.
For him to come back and play.
I don't know if I don't know. I mean, I think that first of all, if it was truly the thing that broke up his marriage, don't you think he'd play one more year? If that was truly the thing that ended his marriage, don't you think he'd have to play one more year?
Because
you can't break up your marriage for just 1 year of playing. If it was that important to you to play for one more year, that you were willing to sacrifice your marriage over it.
Right.
You were willing to play for two more years or three more years. Sorry, I just as now that he's retiring, it's hard for me to believe that that's truly the thing that ended their marriage. It might have been the straw that broke the camel's back, but that's not what broke up their marriage. I can't believe that.
Yeah.
And then, you know, he was still a good quarterback. He wasn't great. He couldn't elevate a team all by himself the way he used to. But there are a lot worse quarterbacks in the NFL right now than Tom Brady. And I do believe if he was in the right system, the right people again, why couldn't he go to Vegas and play with Devontae Adams and be reunited with Josh McDaniels?
He just can't move. I mean, his brain moves at a pace faster than everybody else, and his arm is pretty still elite and accurate. But you just, I mean, physically, you just like...
Kind of, except also his offensive line got beat up this year, and they weren't the same. By the way, they beat the Seahawks. I don't know. I think he could have kept playing, but he's obviously not going to, or at least he says he's not going to as of today. And, you know, what does that mean for us here in Seattle? I think that it's another relevant,
opening.
Right?
It absolutely
it's another opening. It's another guy who's – Brady Henderson said yesterday 14 teams out there that could be looking for a quarterback. Well, now here's one more that's not going to be fitting into one of those spots. We've talked about specifically Vegas where he might have been a fit and saying that if they got Tom Brady, they're not rebuilding. But if they don't, well, is somebody else excited to go to Vegas and kind of the mess that's there right now? I don't know. Maybe they decide to rebuild. Maybe you can trade for a Max Crosby. So I actually think it's got a lot of relevance.
I mean, did Geno Smith tweet out clapping hands? Because I'm sure he was thrilled about it.
It's good news for him.
Yeah, absolutely. Matt Ryan is done. Tom Brady is done. We'll see Nick Foles, some of these other guys that have been around, right? I mean, the more that those guys are done, the merrier for Geno Smith when it comes to opportunity. And especially, and maybe in particular, at a Tampa team that does have some veterans, and it does have a coach in year two that's got to win. I mean, Todd Bowles was fired with the Jets. This year was just a disaster. They were under 500 ball club for any number of different reasons, but he's got to win. And that is, I think, the situation that the Geno and his team has to leverage the most. Okay, where's their little desperation? Where do they need a guy that, you know, can complete 69% of their passes? Where do they need a guy that's been around this league for 10 years? You know, where is that right fit in that organization that really wants to lean on a veteran that isn't in reboot and rebuild, that isn't going to go young?
Mm-hmm.
And, yeah, I think with Tom's retirement, that for Geno is good news. And for those of us in Seattle that want a small market for him, that's not great news.
No, I don't. Again, I was just, we replayed Brady from yesterday, Brady Henderson, and this just continues to add to my belief that it's going to be hard for these two sides to find an agreement. And I'm 100% not with Brady that they can let this thing go to free agency. I just believe if Geno goes to free, so ESPN has him as the fifth best free agent on the market.
Right.
Top five free agents don't wait. They sign like the minute free agency starts.
They're in John Clayton's first wave.
They're in the first wave.
Yep.
Geno's going first wave, guys. He's not waiting 4 or 5 days or a couple of weeks to sign and going back and forth. When free agency opens, if Geno Smith is a free agent, he signs.
Well, here's the reality. Here's the reality. Those conversations have started, and they've started this week.
I understand that.
Down in Mobile at the Senior Bowl. And then they will accelerate down at the Combine between John and his agents and other teams. And that, too, one of the benefits of having a long-tenured, cohesive group. Mm-hmm. That Pete and John can have conversations, and there is a legal tampering period. Some would call it collusion. I'm not going to go that far, but there is a legal tampering where you do try to figure out, okay, you know, much like Jerry DePoto had to figure out with Mitch Haniger.
What's the market?
What's the market going to be?
But how is the market not going to be robust for one of the few established quarterbacks in a league where half the teams are looking for one? It's going to be robust. He's a top five free agent. I don't think ESPN's way off on that. And so this idea of, oh, you can just let him go to free agency and then, you know, see what the market is and he'll come crawling back. I don't buy it. If he goes to free agency, he's gone. Mm. And so now you've got to decide, because if I'm him, I'm not taking $1 less than the franchise tag. So why would he?
I think somebody's going to pay that. More metaphors this morning, please.
Would you stop that?
No, I'm serious. I would like I'm going to use a big word. I've already used one in the opening segment. I'm going to use a big word.
What was your big word?
I don't remember now, but I said it at the 2-minute mark.
All right.
I would like you, now that you edumacated, I would like you to use a metaphor every segment. Can you do that?
No.
Come on. You spent 2 hours in a Progressive commercial last night with one of the brightest men on earth. You can speak a little more. Once an hour?
No, that man sleeps more than I do. I don't get enough sleep to speak in metaphors every morning.
Didn't you have a 2-hour nap yesterday?
I did, but then, you know, it's not enough. It's never enough, Brock. What can I tell you?
Because he's already talking about how he probably won't get one today or tomorrow.
It's so just a disaster.
Like, he's getting grumpy ahead of time.
I am. The moment I wake up and realize I can't take a nap that day, my grumpiness starts right about then. Yeah, woke up on the wrong side.
They may have read the book, but they still have a long way to go.
I do. Yeah, a long way to go. All right, coming up next, we'll give you everything you need to know. Scott Service was in the building yesterday, and we heard from the skipper. He's ready for 2023. Are you? It's Brock and Salk, Sales Sports on 710.
Need to know.
15 minutes past every hour with Brock and Salk.
Here's what you need to know. Up first.
Well, the calendar is certainly turned now to February. That means spring training starts this month, just a few weeks away, and you'll be hearing from a whole bunch of the Mariners over the next few days. Sounds like Teoscar Hernandez and others are going to be on this afternoon with Bump and Stacy, Jerry DePoto speaking today at the big Mariners pre-spring training luncheon. And then yesterday, Scott Service here in the building chatting with Wyman and Bob and says, yeah, they've got high expectations this year, and that's okay.
Oftentimes, there's been a few off seasons I've come in here, and these conversations haven't been as easy.
Yeah.
You know, you're trying to explain how we're going to get this all turned around, and we're not talking about one or two things. We're talking about 8 or 10 things. So the fact that the expectations are higher is great. That's exactly what we were shooting for. And along the way, you know, you've seen it's been a different offseason for me in Seattle this year. Every time I go somewhere, somebody's going to recognize. I was at the 18-inning game. I think we had 250,000 people at the 18-inning game.
He's pretty comfortable in his own skin, huh? We've watched Dad over the years kind of grow in that way. He and Jerry, you know, for as much credit as we give Pete and John, we probably should start pointing to Jerry and Scott being a cohesive unit and team and talking about that relationship through organizations, Mike, and in the years and the trust that they have together. But it is fun to hear Scott. You don't hear as many of those little nervous laughs, right? He's pretty confident. He likes this team. They've got a young core. Why wouldn't you? You've got one of the young great superstars in all of baseball, and you got a young core built around him, as we talked about yesterday. And most power polls and most pundits out there putting this team as one of the top 10 in baseball. Yes, Scott, you're right. Very different expectations into 2023.
Well, and you mentioned the young guys on this team. There's an additional advantage there.
I think it's exciting to have a team that now young fans, young kids can connect to. You know, for years I heard of, you know, and you saw throughout baseball, everybody was a Ken Griffey Jr. fan. Mm-hmm. Oh, I grew up watching Griffey. I grew up watching Jr. And Jay and Edgar and Randy and Jamie Moyer and Dan Wilson. Now maybe we're shifting to another group or another generation of players here, which is great for young people. That's
yeah, young players, young people, nice connection to be made with this Mariners team now moving forward.
Here's the second thing you need to know.
Well, for the second time in as many years, we have a Tom Brady retirement.
Good morning, guys. I'll get to the point right away. I'm retiring for good. I know the process was a pretty big deal last time, so when I woke up this morning, I figured I'd just press record and let you guys know first. So I won't be long-winded. Like, you only get one super emotional retirement essay, and I used mine up last year. So really thank you guys so much to every single one of you for supporting me, my family, my friends, my teammates, my competitors. I could go on forever. There's too many. Thank you guys for allowing me to live my absolute dream. I wouldn't change a thing. Love you all.
What year were you drafted?
I was drafted in April of 1999.
So 1 year before Brady.
Mm-hmm.
He's still playing.
No, he's retired.
Well, okay.
You watch but your mouth.
He was still playing.
Is this a metaphor you're
no,
leading into?
No, it's remarkable. How Assembling? Glad are you? I've never asked you this before.
Yeah.
How glad are you were drafted the year before and aren't one of the quarterbacks drafted ahead of Tom Brady that year?
It's true. He named his production company 199. Peyton's got Omaha Productions, and now Tom's got 199 as 199th pick in that draft. I think it's safe to say that over the rest of my lifetime, and who knows how many days those are, but over the rest of my lifetime, we won't see anybody do what Tom Brady did for 22 years, win those many Super Bowls, be that available. And I think the most remarkable thing, and I was just listening to some guys this morning talk about it, and these were defensive players. They're like, he was the greatest teammate ever. He was the greatest teammate superstar. Because he was still normal. He still introduced himself. As corny as that may have sound on the outside and as weird as that may appear, it was real. It was genuine. He was an incredible, incredible teammate. And his numbers will be, well, very difficult to
The numbers break. Are absurd. We were going through what he did in his 20s, his 30s, and his 40s. Moore was pointing out that he's got a legitimate Hall of Fame case for any of those three parts of his career. His 20s is a Hall of Famer. His 30s is a Hall of Famer. And his 40s, with two Super Bowls in his 40s, is also a Hall of Famer. He should be a three-time Hall of Famer when he finally is eligible to go into the Hall.
Here's the third thing you need to know.
Well, Brock, it does turn out somebody wants to get paid by the Waltons after all. It's Sean Payton eventually signing a deal to become the Broncos' next head coach. They deal a first-round pick and more. It's the one they got from Miami in order to get him. Is he the right coach for this situation? In some ways, I would say yes, right? He's a Parcells guy, no nonsense. He'll be in charge, which is something that they absolutely need there in Denver. On the other hand, if he's just bringing his New Orleans system with him, that's not a good fit for Russell Wilson.
Yeah, but remember, in New Orleans, he brought to life Taysom Hill. Mm-hmm. In New Orleans, Teddy Bridgewater played the best football of his career. I chatted and checked in with some of my Fox colleagues last night, just kind of curious, right? Just as Urban Meyer is down there and different players and coaches have come in and out of the doors at ESPN and Fox, how do they handle people? How do they treat others? How do they work? Did they just show up and collect the multi-million dollar check? And boy, he got some pretty darn positive reviews that A, he treated people well, B, he worked at it, C, he's a perfectionist, and D, he was not willing to sit out another coaching cycle. I think you heard, and we got some sound of some people saying they're a bit surprised that he took this job, but I don't think he wanted to leave $90 to $100 million on the table, sit out for another year, and the chance to jump in with the wealthiest owners in all the NFL. He knows the difference that can make and some of the turnaround that, once they figure out the quarterback, can happen possibly quickly there in Denver.
That's a big if, though, or a big when, or once. Yep. Yeah, we'll see how that goes. That's everything you need to know, quarter past every hour here on the new Brock and Salk show. So, yeah, we'll go to Denver in a few minutes, talk to Brandon Stokely from our sister station there at The Fan in Denver, find out what they're doing, and also get some Pete Carroll questions for him because, you know, as we continue to go through what the Seahawks are trying to pull off this offseason, there is a question about whether or not you can let Geno go and try to roll with Drew Lock, and he would be an interesting person to ask about that.
I got a question for you.
All right.
It's been 5 months, right? We started Labor Day. The new Brock and Salk show.
Yeah.
Just like Happy New Year, you know, now that it's February, I think you probably start saying, hey, Happy New Year, Happy New Year. What? How much longer are we going to keep?
1 year.
What?
1 year.
We got to go a whole year?
Whole year.
Oh, yeah. Gosh.
New's very powerful. It's a very powerful word.
Okay.
You want to be new for a year.
All right.
Yeah, about a year.
That's what the marketing experts say?
That's what the marketing people say. You want to be new for about a year. Yeah.
Okay. Sounds good.
Yeah. So for about a year, although now you're going to make me self-conscious about it. Now you've alerted the people to it. So I don't
how
know
definitive
if we can keep going now.
How definitive was this author last night?
Used to be 2 years? Is that what you said? Wow.
Answering questions like that. It, you know, posed a lot of different questions. Was he definitive or did he?
Why is this so interesting to you?
Because truly, it felt like a progressive commercial last
why
night.
Is this so interesting to you? Why are you so obsessed with me going to go see an author speak last night?
I don't know. It's just awesome.
Why are you so interested in this?
Did you go quarter zip?
Huh? Yeah.
Did you go quarter zip?
Of course. Did you? Yeah. What else is I going to
wear? Did you wear your glasses the whole time?
No.
Because
he was far away. I couldn't wear my glasses. I couldn't see. Like I only need them up close and personal. Yeah. No.
Why? Because I love it. I love that you stepped out and did something you've never done before.
Right.
I do. I have an appreciation. Is the
and
older
you
I get?
I'm waiting for. Are you going to make a man card comment? Because I saw some text yesterday saying, oh, you're going to see an author. You're going to give up your man card?
Nope.
Okay. I hope you're not going there because, you know.
What kind of man likes to read books and learn?
Men don't like being smart and learning. Loser. Man card.
No, I would never do that.
What are you, a woman?
Nope.
Trying to be smart? So stupid. Brandon Stokely will join us next. Brock and Salk, Sales Sports on 710.
You're listening to Brock and Salk.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studio.
On Seattle Sports Station.
Well, sometimes the world just sort of works out nicely. We've never had a guest on from Denver before, have we? And then we finally book a guest from Denver, and they find a head coach yesterday. It's weird.
Where was D-Mac from?
I don't know. Who's that? D-who? We've had guests on from Denver before?
I don't think so.
I think
Stokely
Why would
on.
We be interested in what's going on in Denver? It's never been important to us before. We just kind of lucked into this one. But your former teammate, Brandon Stokely, joining us right now. Hello. How are you, sir?
I'm doing great. Thanks for having me. I appreciate it. I've been on once with y'all.
Oh, right. Okay.
One time. Thanks for remembering. It must have been a memorable hit. Appreciate y'all.
Yeah, I don't remember talking to you or D-Mac or Schlereth or Evans or any of you guys, Zach. Yeah, I don't remember any of those because we wouldn't really have any reason to have focused on what's going on in Denver here over the last year.
No reason.
No. You know, I can't believe, you know, of all the things, we're going to talk about Sean Payton here in a minute. We'll talk. Of all the things, can you believe the freaking Broncos beat the Niners this year? Because without that, we do have our number three pick. Mm. And instead, you beat the Niners this year with all the bad teams the Broncos lost to? What's up with that?
Yeah, I mean, the NFL is a crazy game, and the Broncos hit it just right. That was the week after Trey Lance got hurt. Jimmy Garoppolo is his first week coming back. It was in Denver. Their offense was rusty, to say the least, and you know, they certainly weren't the same team then when the Broncos beat them as they were towards the end of the year playing with Brock Purdy. So it was the Broncos lucked into when they played the 49ers. You know, they made a couple plays. That was when Jimmy Garoppolo, I think he ran out of the back of the end zone, like Dan Orlovsky. So a lot of things went their way that day.
You think it's probably time now, Stoke? You think it's probably time now for all the folks in Seattle to just stop watching and rooting against Denver and have any rooting interest? Do you think it's kind of time, just maybe emotionally and everything, like, okay, y'all had your fun, and now it's time to just kind of go back to the Northwest? What do you think?
Well, I think, you know, if you're looking at the Russ trade and you wanted him to play bad and you, you know, you wanted Seattle to win that deal, guess what? You won. It's over. Y'all won that deal, and y'all fleeced us over here, and you got draft picks. You got a nice young football team, and so it's like, yeah, I think it's probably time to just let Russ just try to pull for Russ now, right? I think at the beginning you're kind of bitter that Russ might have wanted to get out of town and force his way out of town, and but you know what? You won, okay. And now we can all hopefully just pull for Russ just to get back playing at a decent level.
I don't know about that, Stoke. My guy Salk here, he put together, he's a poll master. He loves putting epic polls together in social media. And yesterday during the show, of all things, he puts out a poll. He says, okay, now that the draft compensation's settled, there's no business reason to do so. Are you still rooting against the Broncos? Be honest. And of the, I don't know, 6,000 folks that voted on it, what do you think the percentage was that said, yeah, I'm gonna stop rooting against them? What do you think the percentages were on that poll yesterday from our listening audience?
That we're going to still hope the Broncos don't do good?
Yeah.
Are you still
75%.
Rooting against them? Not close. Yeah, 65%.
Okay. Yeah. But a lot of those, you got to remember, are from the old AFC West days. A lot of people were like, yeah, I'm still rooting against them, but I've always hated them since Elway. I mean, like, so they're, you know, some old school fans who still have some of that bitterness. What are they going to be rooting against? Why Sean Payton, and what will he do for the Broncos next year?
Well, he's going to solidify and just the head coaching position, which is obviously very important. I mean, you see in Seattle what Pete Carroll has done there. You know, it's been he's been unbelievable, and you got to have a head coach. If you don't have a head coach, you don't have a chance. And, you know, you don't have to predict this time and hope and pray that, you know, this head coach can go from being a great or a good defensive offensive coordinator to being a head coach and make that transition. That sometimes guys can't do it. And, you know, with Sean Payton, he can do the job, and that's very, very important. He can do it at the highest of levels, and he's been a winner, and he did great things year after year in New Orleans. So you don't have to speculate that this new coach is going to, you know, go from being a defensive coordinator to figuring it out as a head coach. You know that you have that, and that's a big foundational piece. And then now you can start trying to fix everything else, because there's a lot that you need to fix here in Denver. You know, obviously starting with Russ, but there's a lot more things. But you got to get that head coaching position figured out, and then, you know, and have some consistency there. It's hard to win when you're changing head coaches every couple of years.
He is Brandon Stokley, 15-year NFL vet, multiple Super Bowl champion on middays at our sister station in Denver. A word that we use a lot, and I think every sports station and lots of analysts love to throw around, is this word culture. Culture. Oh, he's a culture builder. Oh, look at the culture that Pete has cultivated in Seattle. You played a long time in the league in different cultures and different locker rooms. How big a deal is culture really when it comes down to it, Brandon?
Well, I think it is a big deal, and I think you're trying to lay the foundation of a winning program and a winning culture, and sometimes it's hard to break out of losing. And when all you've done in the past 5, 6, 7 years here in Denver is lose, and it's hard to flip that and get that headed back in the right direction. So I think it's very, very important. And when you have a guy like Sean Payton who has done it and done it year after year, that's huge. And, it goes back to, once again, you don't have to project that this next head coach is going to have a winning culture, is going to have to, you're going to have adversity. How is that coach going to handle it? How are you going to handle the speed bumps along the way? There's no more projecting how that head coach is going to, handle the rigors of an NFL season, NFL offseason, all of those things. So winning culture is huge.
What do you think he does with Russ?
I think he coaches him hard. I think Russ is open. I think Russ is going to be receptive. There's reports that they talked on the phone, and I bet you, I can guarantee you that was one of the conversations. Hey, can I coach you hard, Russ? And I think, y'all know Russ better than I do, but I bet, I guarantee you he said yes. He wants to be coached hard now. And I will see if that's the truth or not. But I think his back's against the wall, and he needs Sean Payton. He needed a guy like Sean Payton over a guy like D'Amico Ryans, a coach like that. So I think he's gonna coach Russ hard, and try to get some of the flaws that we saw last year with the reads and the progressions and the footwork cleaned up. Because if you don't have that, all the other stuff is gonna be hard to. It's going to be hard to be successful.
Unlike my co-host, I do remember all the guests. I take notes many times.
All right.
In fact, the last time you were on, you talked about the Broncos needing an adult in the room. They just had to have a leader.
I don't think I remember the last time Stokely was on and we were playing him Coach O sound, and you were talking about how when you first met him, he still spoke Cajun.
So you're just playing dumb? Is that what you're trying to do?
I was making a joke. I didn't realize everybody would take it so seriously.
Oh, okay. You're just playing dumb on that one.
Sheesh.
I am curious. Here's where I am curious, Stoke, on this, is Sean Payton comes out of the Bill Parcells tree. And the Bill Parcells just communication, I've already heard Mark Schlereth talk about it and tweet about it. And yesterday he was on our afternoon show here and with Wyman and Bob saying, oh, now some fear comes back in the building, right? Players now going to fear a head coach for the first time in some time. That wasn't Pete, right? And your experiences around Pete Carroll and everything else. I mean, as far as like the Bill Parcells spectrum versus the Pete Carroll spectrum and the way that they kind of go about it, very, very different. How do you think Russ handles that kind of coach that isn't going to be necessarily building you up and the biggest positive cheerleader, but actually is a little bit more at times on that fear curmudgeonly end of it?
I think it'll be good. I think it'll be fine. I think Sean Payton, you see him in New Orleans, and they got videos of him in the locker room after the game dancing, and they got the music going, and it just seemed like a fun place to play, right? But you also have to walk that fine line. And, I was with Pete Carroll that first year, and they made more transactions that year and cut and brought in more different players than any team in the history of the NFL that year. I don't know if it's since been broken, but it was absolutely insane. So you feared for your job, right? And so I think there's a fine line that you can walk between, being a stern head football coach, but also being a player's coach at the same time. And especially nowadays, I think you have to be able to walk that fine line. And I think Sean Payton has done that. I don't think he's like a grumpy old man that's not going to have fun, that's not going to, relate to his players. But he's also going to say, when it's time to get down to business, we're going to work and we're going to get after it. So I think he'll do a good job with that.
The other thing we wanted to talk to you about today is where the Seahawks go with their own quarterback situation. Geno's a free agent. Drew Lock is a free agent. I personally think Geno's going to get paid some significant money, and I'm not sure the Seahawks are going to be on board with that. Do you, just knowing what you know of Drew Lock and knowing what you know of Pete Carroll, having played for him, as you said, for part of that year, could he be willing to say, we trust our system and we're going to not pay Geno and see what I've got in Drew Lock, who, if I liked what he did in practice last year?
Absolutely. I could see that happening 100%. I think when you trust your system and you trust your coaching and you trust your philosophies, then you can make that transition. And, you know, oh, we might, you know, also draft a quarterback early in the draft and give him, you know, let him compete in training camp or let him sit a year behind Drew Lock. I certainly could see that happening. They have a plan in place. And then if you look at what they did last year, that gives them more confidence that their plan that they have works. And, you know, trading Russ away and then just going with Geno Smith. And who thought Geno Smith would have that much success? And he did. So it's going to be interesting to see, you know, like you said, like what that contract looks like for Geno Smith. I think they end up working it out there in Seattle and figuring something out because I think it's best for both parties. I don't know another team that's going to give Geno a lot of money. Now, I don't know if Seattle wants to, you know, pay him at all or not, but I don't know if another team after 1 year wants to, you know, take that type of risk on Geno Smith.
One thing that Zach and Stoke do different than our show, Salky, is every once in a while, you know, they'll put a little something down, a little wager here or there.
Oh.
And they'll talk about it, you know, and I'm just curious, my last question for you, Stoke, if you were to go back in the Wayback Machine in August, September, and there was not this prop out there, I don't think there was this bet anyway, but if I would have had you on and said, Stoke, this is before week one, this is even middle of the preseason, before Drew got COVID and missed his opportunity to start and everything else, and I said, Stoke, if one of these two QBs, Drew Lock or Geno Smith, is going to throw for 4,000 yards, 69% completion, and 30 touchdowns, who would you have bet it was?
Drew Lock, because, you know, we hadn't seen a lot of him. It seemed like we've seen a lot of Geno, and it never was really good. And Drew Lock was a little bit more of the unknown. And if you take him away from this system and put him in Seattle, maybe he could thrive in that system. But it would have been Drew Lock for me.
Can I ask you a tough question? I shouldn't even ask this. You've been a fantastic.
You can't say tough question, and then I shouldn't ask you, then I gotta say, then, you know, I'm gonna say, well, you gotta ask.
Oh boy,
do you hate Tom Brady?
You know what? I actually really like Tom Brady.
Now you're lying on our show. That's ridiculous.
No,
you know?
No. I'm being serious. I used to hate Tom Brady because I probably would have two more Super Bowl rings because of Tom Brady. But I have a coach that Brock knows really well, Clyde Christensen, that coached Tom Brady. How about that? He coached Peyton Manning. He coached Tom Brady. And he also coached Brock Hewitt. How about that? Huh? Yeah. I mean, throw Brock.
What a trio!
There. I know.
Which one doesn't fit? Huh?
What they have nine Super Bowl rings between them.
But Clyde spoke glowingly, didn't he?
Yeah,
Clyde loved Tom.
He really did. He really did. He spoke very highly of Tom and just what kind of teammate he was and what kind of person he was. So I was like, I can't hate the guy anymore.
How much did you used to hate him?
Oh, a lot. Because I hated the Patriots. I hated the Patriots more than Tom Brady. But Tom Brady was a part of the Patriots. And anybody that was a part of the Patriots, I just hated, right? I mean, it just was one of those things where I just hated that organization. I'm getting a little bit wiser, a little bit nicer in my old age. So those days are long gone.
Appreciate you, Stoke. Thank you, pal.
Yeah, thanks for having me, fellas. Y'all be good.
I'll remember this for the rest of my life.
Second time. Oh, okay. Thank you. All right, there we go. There's Brandon Stokely, a longtime wide receiver, great wide receiver, and does a great job with our sister station in Denver, The Fan. And a big thanks to him for joining us.
Such a good dude. Let me give you a super quick story before Blue 88. Hall of Fame ceremony a couple years ago in Canton. Obviously, Brandon and Peyton are very close. I think Stokely is truly Peyton's closest friend, those Louisiana roots and background and teammates and everything else. And Stokely was there in the building, Tom Benson Stadium in Canton, Ohio. So we're all sitting there as the ceremonies are getting going. All of a sudden, it was as if the president walked in. And it was like, what is going on? I mean, the whole stadium turns. And you got the yellow coats up on stage, right? You got all the past guys, the guys going in. Peyton's class was John Lynch. There were some great guys in his class. But the whole thing stopped when Peyton and Clyde Christensen from Tampa came in the building. And in the respect, and Tom was like, I'm going to be there for Peyton. It was middle of training camp. He flew in like that afternoon. He flew back out that night. But he was going to be there for Peyton, just like I think Peyton will be there for Tom.
What's that going to be? Yeah, exactly. That's pretty cool. Yeah. All right, let's do a Blue 88.
This is Brock and Salk's Blue 88.
Blue 88! Blue in the air, hunt!
We take you to the field as Brock Huard breaks down three football questions as only he can.
Now here's your hosts, Brock Huard and Mike Saul.
All right, question number one. Stokely says he likes Sean Payton as the next coach of the Broncos and what it'll do for Russell Wilson. Do you?
Yeah, I think you circle back to the beginning of this 5-6 weeks ago. These are smart business people. Condoleezza Rice and Greg Penner, Stanford backgrounds and everything else. And they had to get this one right. And they knew there were two names, Jim Harbaugh and Sean Payton, that made the most sense. You had to have someone that could establish culture, someone that's won, someone that understands how to build a team, not an individual. And it was going to be one of those two guys. And it was a bit of a circus all the way through. They went back to Jim Harbaugh last week. I think he was still their number one guy because of the draft compensation and just how much you have to pay and give up for Sean Payton. But ultimately, they were going to get someone that's been there, that's done it. As Stokely said, going to put Russell in his place. I'm a little concerned for our friend Jay Keeps and everything because there's going to be no office. It's going to be a very different environment. Training camp is going to be brutally hard, unlike the cakewalk that it was last year. Russell's going to get talked to in a way that he's not gotten talked to in his entire career, either in Seattle or last year with his buddy Hackett coaching him. So, I think this ownership knew they had to get an adult, someone that can establish culture, and someone that have been there and done it before.
I don't know. Question number two.
Now, without a first-round pick and a second-round pick and salary cap, and in that division, I'll say this. I did reach out to some Fox colleagues who spoke very highly of Sean Payton, but a number of them were like, I'm a little surprised you did this. Like, there's going to be better jobs in next year's coaching cycle.
Yeah.
You know, he wasn't going to go work for the Bidwells. He wasn't going to go down to Houston. He wasn't going to work for Ursay. And then because of how hamstrung you are with draft picks and salary cap.
He wanted to go work this year.
Well, $90 to $100 million guaranteed dollars.
That'll get a ton. Question number two, as I said, meanwhile, the Seahawks are watching, I think it's Pete Carroll's longest tenured assistant coach right now, Dave Canales, who is the quarterback's coach. He had a second interview with Baltimore for the offensive coordinator job. If he were to go, how big a blow would that be?
Not as big as Andy Dickerson that we talked about yesterday, that O-line coach. Dave Canales has done a little bit of everything for Pete. Over the last decade plus, he's been a QB coach, been a passing game coordinator. He's worn different hats. And ultimately, you understand why Baltimore is making this move, right? They want Lamar Jackson back. They're going to put the exclusive franchise on him. And they want a guy relationally to connect with that guy in a way that Dave did with Geno and make him his very best. He is a positive guy. I mean, he's Pete Carroll minus 25 years. I know Dave. I know his family a little bit. I mean, you talk about just treat people the right way, build people up, be an encourager, all of those things. So not a surprise to see him get a second interview. How big a blow would that be? Well, tell me what the QB room in Seattle looks like next year.
Right.
You know, I think that probably is piece and parcel to how big of a blow it is. He's not the play caller. I don't think he's ever called plays here in Seattle. I know he hasn't. It's been Shoddy and Bevel and obviously BBNN Shane right now. So he's going to have a learning curve, but that's all about relationship and trust and getting the best out of people.
All right, question number three. Tomorrow we're speaking with Mel Kiper Jr. at 7:30. We'll have Jerry DePoto, of course, at 8:30. So kind of a big day on the show tomorrow. Looking forward to that. But one of his competitors, Daniel Jeremiah, had his top 50 prospect list come out yesterday. What stood out to you?
Top 50. 11 edge rushers. So this is not a mock draft. This is not let me see what this team's need is. Let me see their history. Let me see their team bill, where they're at. Let me try to... No. This is just straight, flat-out grades. Like the highest graded players, 1 through 50. And by the way, he didn't have that Tennessee guy that Mel mocked to us at 20, Bryson Young or whatever his name is. No, not even in his top 50 graded. 11 edge rushers, by far the single biggest position, were those guys off the edge. A little bit troublesome, only 3D tackles. So it is a group that needs big old difference makers. And I think the longer I get into this, and we will spend a lot of time. Now we're in February, and all of a sudden it's combine and pro days and March and everything else, and here comes the draft, boom, in April. I think the longer we're in this, Salk, it feels a little bit more like fishing. feels a little bit more, well, A, like, yeah, it's a crapshoot anyway. You know, it's not called catching, it's called fishing, because you don't know, you know, if you're going to get something every day out. But also, like, when you're fishing, especially for bottom fish, halibut, you're looking on the depth finder, and you're trying to find these, like, ledges. Because halibut, you know, they're smart, savvy bottom dwellers, right? They want the food to kind of fall to them. So you want just right off a ledge. So you're looking for these things. And when you look at this draft, like, look at that, you know, 11 in the top 50, there's a chance to get a difference-making pass rusher in the first or second round. Mm. D-tackle? And there's really only one. Jalen Carter was his number one guy.
Right.
And then Bressy and Mazi Smith, I think, were in the 40s. So there is a huge, huge ledge between the top end and
everybody else.
Good
thing there's a
whole lot
of defensive linemen who are going to be available in free agency or in the trade market. Yeah,
there are 8 cornerbacks and 5 tight ends as well. So I think I told you, edge rushers, corners, and tight ends. And this tight end class, the best, they say, in a decade. So those are the 3 positions that are the most dominant in that top 50.
All right, that is today's Blue 88. We do that every morning at 7:45. Canales thing is interesting. The Sean Payton one, I'm not convinced on that. First of all, I think you're right. The good news, he is going to coach Russ Harden. That'll probably help Russ. I'm curious to see what kind of an offense they design. Can Russ still run well enough to do what he's great at? Mm-hmm. Right? Or are they going to try to keep him in the pocket? Is this a Drew Brees style offense, which I don't think Russ is very good at? I'm curious what Sean Payton comes in for his first conversations with Russ, what he's trying to figure out.
Well, I guarantee you he'll have watched every snap of last season. He will have notes on every single game. He will want to attack what your game plan and your thought process was in all of these. And much like Mike Holmgren did with us back in the day, that sack reel and that interception reel is one of the most humbling experiences you can have with a veteran coach that knows it and sees it and has done it all. And you're not going to wiggle your way out of it. He is going to put that film on and say, Russ, walk me through all these interceptions. Russ, walk me through these 50 sacks. Russ, walk me through these decisions in the red zone that cost you games. And he will demand that, and he will have that accountability. And I don't know if there was another coach. Jim Harbaugh and him would be the two. And they've got to figure that out in Denver. And in that way, I think the right move for the Broncos.
Doesn't matter, get better. You think that's the direction he goes with Russell Wilson?
Pretty much.
That was a phrase that we heard from Scott Servais quite a bit last year. And we heard some new ones from him yesterday. Stick around, you'll hear them as well. It's Brock and Salk, Seattle Sports on 710, seattlesports.com.